Welcome to Take Note. This is our podcast. I'm Ted. Got Adam with me here.
Hey, Ted.
This is our podcast about stationery, notebooks, attention, parenting, and overall appreciation for the poignant and preposterous possibilities of any given moment. We're going to walk through a few segments as we like to do. A lot of them based around stationary topics, but a lot of them based around the moments that make up our days. And, you know, really what it comes down to is Adam and I have a predilection for capturing these moments in our notebooks. And we like to think of it as a way to sort of help us stay on track, stay in the moment, appreciate what's going on around us, observe what's going on around us. And then this is our opportunity to take a step back, share them with each other, laugh a little, cry a little, scribble some notes, read some notes, feel some paper in between our fingertips. How you doing, Adam?
I'm losing my mind, Ted. How are you?
About the same.
Great.
I didn't plan on admitting to it right here in the first 45 seconds or so, but I appreciate your candor, and I'll ride that wave.
I'm snowbound? I am stranded in a hotel in New Jersey with a nor'easter going on around me. My home is in Chicago. And I went a very long time without having a human interaction this afternoon. Like a solid 9 hours without a face-to-face interaction. So this is going to be an interesting episode.
How frequent are your normal human interactions? Every minute and a half? 2.5 minutes?
Well, they're usually more frequent than every 9 hours. Time changed while I was up here watching the snow. I think part of the problem maybe is that I decided I should take time-lapse videos of the snow. And so then you just want it to be as still and leave it alone for as long as possible. All of a sudden, 3 hours pass, you know? And that's maybe you've got a good time-lapse video if you put 3 hours into it.
So you're staring straight into the abyss and you're recording. I mean, you're dancing with the devil. You're in Moby Dick territory here.
I've had too many coffees, and
well, what do you got? What do you got for me?
Well, I'm gonna read a little bit of what I wrote just a few minutes ago.
Every time I forget to introduce what do you got is, but what do you got is our segment in which we share some notes from the past week, some moments in time. We put them out on the table. Sorry, carry on.
I'm gonna share what I wrote just a few minutes ago, actually. I wrote, 10 p.m. in a hotel room in Cranford, New Jersey. I have not had a face-to-face interaction in 9 hours. Getting ready to podcast with Ted, and literally 4 snowblowers just started outside my window. Not sure how I will handle the audio. I also don't have headphones, period. Then was trying to set up a ride with an Uber driver named Raouf, who was very nice bringing me back from Whole Foods in the storm today, but the cash fare for tomorrow is too much for me to get to the airport. I don't have enough cash on me. He doesn't believe me, and now he's sending me texts and screenshots writing, "I'm not lying to you." That's how much it costs.
Wait, is an Uber driver?
He was an Uber driver. He was very nice. The storm had started. I'd gotten a ride out to the Whole Foods to get some food for lunch and dinner since I was going to be here. I also bought 3 iced coffees, which was just ridiculous because I don't know. I got picked up. I wanted to get picked up in the SUV because it really is, you know, the state of New Jersey said travel will be impossible. So I figured that'd be a little safer. And, I asked him if he thought it would be easy to get a ride tomorrow morning, and he said he might be able to give me a ride. I said, "Oh, that sounds great. I'd be happy to do that." He said to me, he goes, and I'm a grown man, so if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. But then he quoted me $95 tonight, and when I said, "Oh, you know, I just don't have that much cash."
Wait, why? Where's this cash coming into play?
Well, because he would have just, I don't want to like out Raouf, but his plan, you can't schedule a ride with a particular driver. Uber's going to set you up with whoever. But if you're trying to leave early in the morning, I should be fine, but there was a storm today. You know, maybe there won't be an Uber driver around.
I don't know, man. You said you didn't want to out Raouf, and you just straight up outed Raouf.
Listen, how many Raouf? There's got to be a ton of Raoufs.
All right. Let me see. So, I was listening to the band Dawes. You know this band? Uh-huh. And they back up Connor Oberst of Bright Eyes, who I've loved recently. But a lyric from a Dawes song jumped out at me. So, I recorded it in Orange Pigma Micron. Here, my got my standard craft brown line field notes. It's not faith that comes from miracles, but miracles that come from faith. I thought that was nice. In other words, your lucky stars for Raouf, and just give the man his money already.
Well, you're just as bad as Raouf. I just don't have the cash. My goodness. If I had $95 in cash and I wasn't stranded in a hotel room in Cranford, New Jersey, I would I'd be happy to have Raouf, although now he's weirded me out.
Yeah, it's
I don't think
he's gone. Yeah. He's gone.
And actually, while it was happening, I was thinking that what you would say to me, which I think you said to me last week, is that I enter into these sorts of interactions that everyone else, you know, that like we've created technology to be able to avoid these interactions, and I jump in. It's like I feel as though if I can set up something like that's real, that's more real to, hey, we've had this little relationship. I appreciate the ride you gave me. You can help me out. I can help you out. Pay with cash. Be great. That seems like I always think that that's going to be like an authentic interaction, but it ends up being an authentic fiasco.
Well, and as we reflect on, you know, what stationary means and what I think really more so the communities that build up around stationary. I think a lot of people, you know, for example, people post a lot like in the Field Nuts group or in the Erasables group, this is my favorite thing on Facebook, or this is the only reason I still use Facebook is because of this group. So I think in some way the appeal of these groups is similar to what you're talking about, where you have this desire to kind of have some interaction with some value beyond maybe just the, I don't know, the sheer single use transaction. And you're kind of looking for something that has a little more depth, a little more substance to it. Like you want to raise the Raouf, you know, in a way. You want to raise the Raouf.
Well, even just the math of it, when you think of it, I mean, and I don't think I consciously think of it this way, but my time with... I have 100% more Raouf if I get a second ride with Raouf. You know, I have doubled the depth of this very, not like I've got a relationship or a friendship with him, but it is twice as, I don't know, there's twice as much experience.
Well, he becomes your guy.
Exactly.
That's and there's right. There's something about having a guy and my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now I get it.
Yeah, next time I'm in New Jersey, I just call my guy.
But I think there's a that desire for depth is, I mean, you I think you seek it out in a a more advanced way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know,
I think
that
some people don't want to make that they don't want to put that amount of trust in somebody. They want they it takes a lot more for them to sort of have a guy. And there's people we all have in our lives who have those guys, those gals, and it seems really cool, but then we think, oh, but that just will never be me. That's not my personality. It is your personality, except Rove's going to steal your identity and drain your bank account. That's the only problem.
That's right.
Well, now, not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but when has it gone well for you? Who are your guys that you've set up that aren't fiascos?
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that I do think it does go well for me. I don't know that I've got a guy, but when I was in Houston in December and we were hanging out, we got a girl. We got Miriam, who was our Uber driver.
She was a rock star.
That's right. And she wanted to, she had told us that she was just waiting outside the arena where Lady Gaga played, hoping to meet or see Lady Gaga. And I said, well, take us there. We'll go wait with you. And we hung out with her a while. We heard her stories about she'd met Beyonce a few times in her life. Uh-huh. She said, I touched breasts with Beyonce.
Houston native, Beyonce.
Yep. So
Yeah, no, that was epic. And that was all you. And that was like what became one of the unforgettable nights in the last 20 years. And I the next day I looked at our summary of our Uber ride. I'm pretty sure we were in that car for 45 minutes. And that's not an exaggeration. That was literally the record. Half of that sitting outside the Toyota Center, Houston, Texas. And then, gosh, I wish I could recall this up. It's probably in a notebook somewhere. We sat there for a while, and then an SUV drove past, and everybody thought it was Lady Gaga, and this guy was wandering in the street. And he was holding some sort of sign and saying weird things.
Yeah, I remember him being a man dressed somewhat like a child.
And at some point, he just said something out loud that Miriam could no longer abide. And that's what sent her. I think she got a stalker vibe from the guy or something. That she was out. She was done.
She was very upset.
But I think just to turn it back to stationary a little bit.
Why?
I think the connections that we build around stationery have that extra level of depth because it's like the products themselves and the passion or the usages, the way we use things, I think there is a certain depth to that, that's part of the appeal, is that someone can say, you know, how do you use these things? And so many people are willing to jump up and say, oh, I do this. I build it that way. And then you kind of it forges those connections between people.
Absolutely. What do you have? What do you got?
Let's see. What else do I got? So my child. We went to the rodeo, which it's rodeo season here in Houston. So I decided, I had my field notes in my back pocket when we took the kids out to the it's like a livestock show, lots of animals around, some petting zoos, and then there's kind of this carnival section. About 10 minutes in, I decided I would use my notebook in this case to record the instances in which my 3.5-year-old son placed himself in peril. Just to try to capture a sense of what it's like to bring a child this age into an environment like a rodeo. The first thing that happened was someone who owned a goat or a sheep of some kind was raking out their stall. My son Ewan walked straight into the handle of the rake with his forehead. The guy was facing the other direction. He just walked right in it, forehead. And he was appalled at himself. I reassured him numerous times that it was not his fault. Let's see. Coming out of they had these very fancy porta potty things that are like, you walk up a few steps into kind of a trailer where the bathrooms are.
Okay.
Coming out of the trailer, Ewan misses the top step, just doesn't even see it's there. Proceeds to do just complete cartwheel down the remaining steps And so just slow motion, just total 360 degree flip. And there's these serrated edges on the steps so that, you know, you'll have good footing. Mm-hmm. So he ends up nicking his forehead and getting a scratch on his back. And let's see.
Do you think these things happen because you had your face in your notebook?
I did not. I waited until I was holding him in my arms, and you know, then I could wedge my hand back to my back pocket and pull it out, and you know, comfort him while taking down notes. The moments of relief when he wasn't badgering me about doing one thing or another, when he was actually on the actual rides, which thank God were small enough for children his size to ride, was when he was actually in these cars. He would just get this look. He would just go totally peaceful and just sit on these rides and spin around and spin around. You know, you try and wave to him and everything. Hey, buddy. And he would just have like this dead face. Like he couldn't even see you. And you realize he's an addict. He's addicted to getting whatever it is that he's demanding. And once he has it, it's like that shot of heroin and he just goes completely slack. And as soon as that car stops, kicks right back in again. But, you know, you end up at the rodeo and you're taking notes. And I have these moments of self-consciousness, I would say. I think
oh yeah,
it's like being on a phone is the most obvious thing ever. But pulling out a notebook, it's kind of I'd be curious to get your take. Because I at the rodeo, you're just surrounded by families, humanity. Most people are on their phones most of the time, but somehow pulling out a notebook, it has something of like, what are you doing? What's going on there? Like you're a reporter. Not that anyone actually thinks that, but you start to feel that way.
It seems like you're inspecting. I was sitting in a restaurant waiting for some takeout for lunch the other day. And I pulled the notebook out, and it. I feel like they think that I'm taking notes on how long it takes to get the food. And in fact, the other "what do you got" that I had was kind of related to that. I first captured it on my phone because it was so good, but I didn't want to betray that I was writing down everything I was hearing.
Yeah.
So I had I was in the car with two volunteers, and I'm here in New Jersey, and I asked them if they'd change the law about pumping your own gas in New Jersey, you know, because it's all full service. And they hadn't changed the law. These were two women in their 50s, and they started basically talking about their romantic feelings about gasoline and gasoline attendants. They said that when they were kids, it used to be that if you were a manly man, you could get out and you could pump your own gas and the gas station attendants would let you do it. And so they both had these feelings of like, that was a real manly man pumped his own gas. And one of them said that she thought that they should have a perfume that had a slight like gasoline, hint of gasoline to it. And the other woman said, I always thought that as a kid too. The other thing that was really interesting about that, like I said, they're women in their 50s, and they are, one of them especially, truly afraid to pump gas if they're out of state, because they've gone 50 years of, you know, being led to believe that they can't do it. They need someone to do it for them. And this woman was telling me that when she was in Michigan, she went into the gas station and basically begged the cashier to pump it for her, because she was convinced that she would do something wrong, the gasoline would spill everywhere, she'd start a fire and blow the place up, and they would not do it for her.
Wow.
And they said she had to do it, and she was very scared.
So you were taking notes on this?
I took notes. In this case, I took a few notes on my phone, because I didn't want to. It's in my notebook now, but I didn't want to forget it. And I didn't want it to be obvious that I was Hold on 1 second. Let me lick the quill and, you know, and get this for posterity.
Well, I mean, the irony, of course, is that a phone can record 1,000 times more information in the blink of an eye than any notebook can. And yet there's something about pulling out a notebook that it's like only a real manly man will pull out a notebook. I think that's what I'm saying.
You know, I've always thought that cologne should have a hint of paper. Smell paper to it.
I don't know. It's like we're inspecting something. That actually vaguely reminds me of a conversation in the sort of analog versus digital realm that today at work we met with a videographer and a director, just working on a video at work, and the idea came up that the videographer. We were just talking about capturing visuals, and a lot of, you know, I work at a university, so the visuals we want to capture is what you're trying to show people learning or working or you know, showing this stuff visually. And he was lamenting that digital culture is just, it's none of it is interesting from a visual standpoint. And he just was kind of running through the, you know, record players and video cassettes and all the different, you know, typewriters, everything that was, the more analog it is, the more visually appealing it is. I just thought that was interesting. I hadn't thought about that in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause somebody putting a earbud into their ear is kind of a snooze.
Well, that's it. Like once you put the earbuds in, you're doing every media. Like,
right.
Once you're in front of your laptop, you're listening to music, you're typing, you're doing all of the, everything is condensed into one single visual thing. If you paid any attention to the local news, half of the stock footage that they use on the TV broadcast is people sitting at computers typing. It's like the universal, local news footage that just can basically mean anything that you want it to mean. Detective John Smiley is investigating. Picture of a detective typing in a computer. Donald Trump tweets out. Picture of Donald Trump sitting at a computer typing out a tweet. Same thing. 1,000 different meanings.
I'm gonna bypass this idea of Donald Trump sitting at a computer typing out a tweet, because that I don't actually think fits any of our pictures of what Donald Trump is doing when he's tweeting.
Family friendly TV show. We're talking early prime time here.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. The idea of him at the computer. Did you betray to the videographer or the director the degree to which you agreed with them and you were pro analog tools? Did you nerd out with them?
I did not. I was forced into a soulless husk of productivity. So I was not. I didn't have the liberty to just walk over and hug him or anything.
Oh, it was the director Guillermo del Toro?
He was like a New York guy. It was fun. He was one of these,
a really Scorsese do. Type.
Kind of a Scorsese, yeah, kind of a little bit. A little bit of an edge to him, which, you know, when you're talking about higher education in Houston, Texas, it's sort of funny. But, yeah, that's business. But, you know, as I know that you appreciate to work, when you have people come into your workplace who bring the outside perspective, like, I love hiring these people because they can be more artsy than your average, schmo that you just share a office space with day in and day out. They always bring more, like, those are the tattooed folks and the,
That's right.
The rough and tumble. I love it. Ned's, I always think, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll strike out on my own. And then I think about health insurance.
Yeah, I think you could be a director. I could see you doing like a little sci-fi, a story of your childhood in Houston, but through the prism of science fiction and monsters.
It is if a little, I come into his office and told him a fairy tale about a bayou creature who comes out, and now here I am. Yeah, I could pull that off. I think Houston is probably an untapped resource of sci-fi intrigue and terror, perhaps. Something bayou related.
Yeah, there you go.
Speaking of that, actually, I had a notebooky. I'm on the cusp of a notebooky kind of creative venture, which is I actually want to write an essay. My house flooded, as you know, in Hurricane Harvey, the biggest flood rainfall event in the history of the country. Crazy.
I gotta say, I've always thought that you are maybe just a crisis actor.
And so I want to write about it. And actually, I want to. Well, whatever. I'll get into that later. But I want to write an essay about it. And part of what I wanted to write about was I was trying to take notes during Harvey. I had a Field Notes Black Ice that just happened to be what I was using at the time. And so I want to kind of take myself back through it, you know, the day of, kind of wading through the water to get out of our house, go next door, the higher up house and all that. And I wanted to think about those moments when I had a little bit of space to actually take some notes and record, and I can't find the notebook.
Oh,
and it's killing me. It's killing me. Because, you know, I mean, I think we think a lot about, well, oh, how, what do you save your notebook? What do you do with your notebooks? Oh, do you ever go back and read them? And this is a situation in which I really explicitly want to return to it and a specific book and actually, you know, read line by line and actually in like use that for a project. And I cannot find it.
And the added irony is that like you lost so much stuff during the flood, but you didn't lose that notebook. You had, like, you were writing in that notebook. You were keeping it. You were probably tracking the things you lost. And now you can't find that damn thing either.
It's, I mean, in a way, it's kind of indicative of the whole process, because you got the S-storm of the original, you know, couple of days of craziness. But then really the other flip side is this month after month of slogging through the, you know, quote-unquote recovery process of figuring out where you're going to live and what you're going to do, which schools your kids are going to go, yada, yada. And that's the real ass drag of the whole thing is putting the pieces back together. So, yeah, as you say, I had this book with me the whole time. I never lost it. Book didn't get flooded. I wasn't, like, you know, swimming upstream or anything. But, yeah, now in the second place we've lived since it happened, you know, I don't know where it is. And then you'll drive yourself crazy trying to, like, I think the worst thing you can do after you lose a bunch of stuff is sort of build up a desire for a particular thing that you can't, you can't really remember if it got flooded or if you just lost it or if you just don't know where it is. Like, you kind of drive yourself crazy even wondering if it still exists or not. But so, I mean, in a sense, this is even what the essay is about in a way. So I'm kind of experiencing in real time the themes that I actually wanted to cover, like, in the essay, which in a sense is not even a bad thing from a creative standpoint.
Right. Actually, it seems like maybe that's the essay right there. The desire to return to the notebook, which covers the things you lost and everything you went through, and then even that's lost, and what it means to lose something, to not be able to find something.
So now, if I find the notebook, then it'll screw up the essay, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you're gonna have to write two. Also, if you never find the notebook, it lends credence to my horrible theory that you're a crisis actor.
Oh, man. What else you got? Topics?
Yeah, you know, one of the things we always talk about is how we're using our notebook and the tools that we're using. And so I've been, I got two things, short things kind of on that subject related. I'm traveling. I was on a plane. I'm using the same pen that I've mentioned that I'm using on the last few shows, the Kurataki brush pen. And it occurred to me, I used to have this problem where the pens I would have would maybe explode on planes. And it seemed like this huge problem. And I think about it every once in a while now. And I thought about it, you know, this Kurataki pen, it's been fine. There's been no problem. And I think it was maybe as simple as just no longer using that one pen that always exploded on planes. But I didn't realize that at the time. And it felt like every pen could explode. Anyway, that's one thing.
But it was really, it was really just the same model of pen.
Yeah.
One after the other explodes.
Yeah, it's just a mental block that I just... If this pen explodes, I guess that means every type of pen could explode. No, not really. right. And then I, on the plane, I watched a movie called Six Shooter. It's a short film by Martin McDonagh, who wrote that Three Billboards movie, which I haven't seen. And I was writing about it afterwards, and I did this thing, which I think I do in a notebook a lot. It made me think about how we use our notebook. I didn't want to write the whole plot down, but I found myself just making a list of the crazy things that happened in it. Like a few words, like a bullet point list. And I do that every once in a while with a notebook, especially if I'm using a particular notebook or if there's a few pages left or something like that. And it's a different way of writing that is very satisfying. Like, it's satisfying to write the plot of a film that you enjoyed as bullet points. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. I mean, tell me more. What's satisfying about it?
Because it's ridiculous for me to myself, in a notebook that I'm going to just use for myself or might look back to for myself, it's ridiculous for me to describe in detail and in prose, like, the plot of a film that I literally just watched. But as, like, a memory aid or as a capturing the things that made it joyful, or the fact that there were all these different things that happened in this short film, writing it as bullet points is simpler, and it's maybe more to the point. It's capturing what I really liked about it, which is not me going, and then the cow exploded, and then, you know, it's just the cow exploded, the bunny this. This is a great movie, by the way, and there's some spoilers in there for you. But,
I can't wait to... You ruined whether or not the cow would explode.
It really did, actually.
Well, so is it the physical act of writing that you enjoy, or is it the distillation of an experience into its kind of essential components?
Yeah, it's the distillation of it's the capturing the... If it was a lousy movie, maybe I'd have prose to write about it, but just the capturing the joy of all of the things that happened and the discovery. And but I've even, for at times, I would write about my day in that way. If I had a, there's a few of the field notes that have a ledger paper, and I've used them, and I would just write prose over the ledger lines. But sometimes I would say, today I would make a bullet point list of my day, just a different kind of way of thinking about your day. You had mentioned the book you were reading by maybe McMurtry, where he wrote every single emotion that he experienced in a moment.
Yeah.
Or that the character experienced in a moment.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that. It's just changing the way you're writing from a, you know, Dear Diary, today I, and maybe, you know, many of us just leave out the Dear Diary, but that's what you're doing,
yeah,
to just bullet points.
Yeah. Well, there's such value. And I think anytime I read about, you know, the great thinkers or the great sort of, maybe not the great thinkers, but the great thinkers about thinking, a lot of what they come down to is just that same idea recap what you've just experienced. Like, one thing that always stuck to me is that, you know, even after a meeting at work, the value of taking 5 minutes after that meeting to really write down kind of exactly what you're saying, the things that are the most resonant, the most important decisions that you made, like that short time after it happens is like a really critical time. And I mean, there's an obvious metaphysical reward to doing that. It's just saying, I've just had a day. Here is what that day was, or here's what it means to me. And I think what it comes down to is it's an opportunity for you to look at that day in a different way than maybe how it feels. Because I think a day can feel a certain way. You know, for example, concluding bedtime. My God, bedtime. Is there anything more grueling than that day in and day out?
You mean with kids or with just yourself?
Oh, with kids. And
what is your routine, man?
whatever it is, it lasts an hour and a half, and it involves a whole lot of psychological, just psychological ups and downs.
With the kids?
With the children, yes.
Okay, this is getting them to sleep. Got it.
Yes. What other kind of bedtime is there that I might be referring to?
Your own.
Well, yeah, that's easy. I lie in bed and I go to sleep. That's not nearly as taxing as coercing an irrational being into taking a bath, putting on PJs, brushing teeth. Yeah.
What if you had to convince yourself?
Although that's not actually entirely inaccurate for a night owl such as I am.
Can we talk bedtime routine for a brief second?
Do it.
There's a new podcast called Chompers. It is a toothbrushing podcast that comes out twice a day. It's by Gimlet Media. My kids love it. Went from the oldest always resisted toothbrushing, was always trying to kind of weasel out of it. Loves it. No complaints. Just like that. First episode.
So tell me how it's... I mean, I'm amazingly intrigued. Tell me how it's structured.
It's a 3-minute podcast in which it guides you through your 2 minutes of toothbrushing, and while you're brushing your teeth, 30 seconds top left, 30 seconds top right, then same on the bottom. While you're doing that, it's also telling you normally jokes or facts about animals. And I know I have not listened to it while I'm traveling, but I did once last week. I did once last week listen to it after the kids had already gone to school, just for myself, because I can't believe I'm saying this, but it tells you when to stop it. But you really brush your teeth for 2 minutes. Which I, you know to do, and I do, but then a lot of times take shortcuts, or if you're counting yourself, you don't do it. And it's just, I like a good audio production. It's delightful. It was amusing, the whole thing about it. I played it once without the kids around.
Hey, let's do this again next week. What do you say? If you want to check us out online, takenote.space. That is our URL. Zip on over there. You'll find our Twitter feed. I sign my tweets with a little dash T. Adam signs his with a little dash A. We are twitter.com/takenotepod. At takenote.space, you can send us a message. If you too enjoy children's hygiene podcasts without the benefit of a child being present, we'd love to hear about it. My sister is a loyal listener. She informs me that covering things in Mod Podge is known as decoupaging.
Ooh.
Thank you for that bit of insight. She's going to be our first guest. I'm penciling in episode 10.
Fantastic. I just want to add, for anybody who's brushing their teeth while listening to this episode, you can now spit.